So for our final lecture this semester, we will discuss a very interesting set of ideas due to Baer. And there's a whole subject area that's developed around these ideas, so you can consider this to be an introduction to Baer's ideas. And the main result here is called the Baer category theorem. So let X row be a metric space and S be a subset of X. A set E in X is said to be dense in S if every element of S is the limit of some sequence of elements in E. You've seen this idea before, of course. Example, the set of rational numbers Q is dense in any non-trivial interval R. It's also dense in all of R. Example, let X row be the metric space of continuous functions on the interval 0, 1, equipped with the supremum metric as usual. Let E and X be the polynomial functions, then the Weierstrass approximation theorem tells us that E is dense in X. Example, consider the real numbers R with the metric rho ST is 1 if S is not equal to T and rho ST equals 0. Otherwise, then no proper subset of R is dense in R. To see this, notice that if E were dense and were not all of R, and if P were in R, take away E, then rho of P comma E is bigger than 1/2 for all little e and capital E. So elements of E do not get close to P, as E is not dense in R. Example, let X rho be the set of real numbers with the usual metric. Let E be the rational numbers lying in the interval minus 2, 2, then the closure of E is the entire interval, closed interval minus 2, 2. Let Y comma sigma be the continuous functions on 0, 1 equipped with the supremum metric as in earlier examples. Take E and Y to be the polynomials, and the closure of E is Y. We note in passing that if BPR is a ball in a metric space X row, then B bar BR PR will contain, but need not be equal to, the closure of BPR. And there's an exercise in the last section about that exact point. Definition. Let X row be a metric space. We say that E, a subset of X, is nowhere dense in X if the closure of E contains no ball BXR for any X in X and R bigger than 0. Example, consider the integers as a subset of the metric space R equipped with the standard metric. Then the closure of Z is Z itself, and of course Z contains no metric balls. Therefore, Z is nowhere dense in R. Example, consider the metric space X of all continuous functions on the unit interval with the usual supremum metric. Fix an integer k bigger than 0, and let capital E be the set of polynomials Px so that P is a polynomial of degree not exceeding k. Then the closure of E is E itself. That is, the limit of a sequence of polynomials of degree not exceeding k is still a polynomial of degree not exceeding k. And E contains no metric balls, for if P is an E and R is bigger than 0, then P plus R over 2 x to the k plus 1 power is in the ball with center P and radius R, that P of x plus R over 2 x to the k plus 1 is not an E. So that's a pretty obvious example to illustrate the idea. We recall, as noted in an earlier example, that the set of all polynomials is dense in X, but if we restrict attention to polynomials of degree not exceeding a fixed number k, then the resulting set is nowhere dense. Here's our big theorem, the Baer category theorem. Let X row be a complete metric space, then X cannot be written as the union of countably many nowhere dense sets. So if you think of, for example, of the reals, and you think of nowhere dense sets like the integers, this is intuitively appealing. So the proof of Baer's theorem is a bit of work, but we can do it. Just take a few minutes. Here we go. And it's quite similar to the proof that we presented in Math 4111 that a perfect set must be uncountable. You might want to review that proof at this time. So, seeking a contradiction, suppose that X can be written as a countable union of nowhere dense sets y1, y2, and so on. Choose a point x1 in the complement of y1 closure. Since y1 is nowhere dense, we may select an r1 bigger than 0 so that b1 bar, which is b bar x1 r1, satisfies B1 bar intersect Y1 bar is empty. Assume without loss of generality that R1 is less than 1. Next, since Y2 is nowhere dense, we may choose an X2 and B1 bar intersect the complement of Y2 bar and an R2 bigger than 0 so that B2 bar, which is B bar of X2, R2 is a subset of B1 bar, intersect the complement of Y2 bar. Shrinking B2 if necessary, we may assume that R2 is less than 1 half R1. Continuing in this fashion, we select at the jth step a point xj and bj minus 1 bar intersect the complement of yj bar, and a number rj bigger than 0 so that rj is less than 1 half rj minus 1, and bj bar, which is b bar xj rj, is a subset of bj minus 1 bar intersect the complement of yj bar. Now the sequence xj is Cauchy since all the terms xj for j bigger than capital N are contained in a ball of radius rn less than 2 to the minus n, hence they're not more than distance 2 to the minus n apart. Since x rho is a complete metric space, we conclude that the sequence converges to a limit point p. Moreover, by construction, p is in bj closure, bj bar, for every j, hence is in the complement of every yj bar. Thus, the union of the yj's is not equal to x, and that's a contradiction, because we assumed at the outset that the union of the yj's was equal to x. And that contradiction completes the proof of the bare category theorem. There's quite a lot of terminology and other ideas associated with Baer's theorem, but we'll not go into all that here. But we're going to do some really interesting applications. Recall for now that a G-delta is the countable intersection of open sets. Let's first formulate some restatements or corollaries of the theorem which follow immediately. So first corollary, let X rho be a complete metric space, let Y1, Y2, and so on be countably many closed subsets of X, each of which contains no non-trivial open ball, then the union of the YJ also has the property that it contains no non-trivial open ball. That's just a restatement of the fact that a complete metric space cannot be written as the countable union of nowhere dense sets. Another corollary is let X rho be a complete metric space, let O1, O2, and so on be countably many dense open subsets of X, then the intersection of the OJs is still dense in X. It won't necessarily be open, but it will be dense. So the result of the second corollary follows from the first corollary by complementation, or De Morgan's law, if you like. Example, the metric space R, equipped with the standard Euclidean metric, cannot be written as a countable union of nowhere dense sets. So that's just an immediate application of Baer's theorem. By contrast, the rational numbers Q can be written as the union of the singletons QJ, where the QJ represented the numeration of the rationals. Each singleton is, of course, nowhere dense. And Q, the rationals, is the union of all these singletons. But of course, Q is not complete. So this is consistent with Baer's theorem. Example, Baer's theorem contains the fact that a perfect set of real numbers must be uncountable, for if P were perfect and countable, we could write P equals P1, P2, and so on. Therefore, P is the union of the singletons PJ. But each of those singletons is a nowhere dense set in the metric space P, and P is complete, and that contradicts the category theorem. So P cannot be countable. A set that can be written as a countable union of nowhere dense sets is said to be a first category. If a set is not a first category, then it is said to be a second category. Thus, the Baer category theorem says that a complete metric space must be of second category. We should think of a set of first category as being thin, and a set of second category as being fat or robust. This is one of many ways that we have in mathematics of distinguishing fat sets from thin sets. Countable and uncountable is another way. Lebesgue measure theory is yet a third way. One of the most striking applications of the Baer category theorem is the following result, the effect that most continuous functions are nowhere differentiable. We know, thanks to Weierstrass, that there exists one continuous function that's nowhere differentiable, but we're now going to tell you that most continuous functions are nowhere differentiable. This explodes the myth that most of us mistakenly derive from calculus class that a typical continuous function is differentiable at all points except perhaps a discrete set of bad points. So here's the theorem. Let X rho be the metric space of continuous functions on the unit interval 0, 1 equipped with the metric Rho fg is the sup over x and 0, 1 of fx minus gx in absolute value. Define a subset E of x as follows. F is an E if there exists one point at which f is differentiable. Then E is a first category in the complete metric space x rho. So, in the language of Baer, we now have a dramatic statement here about the existence of nowhere differentiable functions. Here's the proof. Surprisingly straightforward. For each pair of positive integers m and n, we let capital A sub m n be the set of all f in the metric space x so that there exists a point little x in 0, 1 with absolute value fx minus ft less than or equal to n times x minus t for all t in 0, 1 that satisfy absolute x minus t less than or equal to 1 over m. For m and n and now fixed, we claim that amn is nowhere dense in x. In fact, if f is an amn, set capital K sub f to be the maximum for x in 0, 1 of absolute value fx plus or minus 1 over m, take away fx divided by 1 over m. Let a to hx be a continuous piecewise linear function bounded by 1 consisting of linear pieces having slope 3 times K sub f. Then for every epsilon bigger than 0, it holds that f plus epsilon times h has metric distance less than epsilon from f and is not a member of amn because the slopes of h are too steep. This proves that amn is nowhere dense. We conclude from Baer's theorem that the union of the amns is nowhere dense in x, therefore s equals x take away the union of the amns is of second category. But if f is an s, then for every x in 0, 1, and every n bigger than 0, there are points t arbitrarily close to s, that is, at distance less than or equal to 1 over m from x, such that absolute value fx minus ft over t minus x is bigger than n. It follows that f is differentiable at no x in 0, 1, and that proves the assertion. Again, this is an exciting way to end the course with a theorem that we could not have imagined a few weeks ago, and this is the power of mathematics. Thank you for your attention this semester. That's the end of the course.